It's one of the highlights of the year, sitting down with you today, and it really marks a milestone moment in my life. As for me, this very moment with you right here signals the end of what I can only describe as one of the most transformational, exciting, terrifying, and a roller coaster filled 12 months of my life. I have said in the past that this podcast has been like my own MBA, that I have learned so much from my guests who've joined me on Conversations of Inspiration. And I have spent the past 210 episodes soaking up all the generous wisdom, life lessons, and insights that our guests have been brave and vulnerable enough to share. In the past year, though, the podcast has played an even bigger role in my life, I have to say. It's been a constant source of reassurance and a moment of grounding and a safe space for me to take a moment and absorb the world beyond my own. And 2024 has personally been a huge year of growth for me. It's had some bad lows, some of the most epic, exciting highs, and the majority of the time has just been spent figuring out a lot of unknowns. And I always knew launching a marketplace the second time around with Holly & Co. would feel like all eyes are on me and very little room for error, and that it would be tough. And I most certainly knew that despite it not being my first rodeo, I still didn't have all the answers. What I didn't, though, anticipate was simply how, I suppose, tough it's been. I've had moments questioning whether I was wrong to do it all over again. I've had moments of complete despair. And yet week in, week out, I've had the complete privilege to hear founders share their stories of perseverance, triumph against the odds, and an all-out determination to pursue their vision. It's been the unwavering commitment to the vision and the strength of mindset to keep going that's been a reoccurring topic across all the series and over all of the years of this podcast. Most recently, Ed Jackson, my guest last week, talked about overcoming trauma and how he believes you can determine your own mindset, how you can go left or right, choosing either to be defined by your experiences or use them to redefine the journey that you're going to take.
Bow your head and let your eyelids close on down. Where we're going, you won't need to bring your frown.
Hi, I'm Holly Tucker, and welcome to my podcast, Conversations of Inspiration. I've reached out to founders and those who simply inspire me to share their hard-earned wisdom with you. My hope is that collectively, these remarkable realizations will help you on your own journey. I like to think of it as inspiration for life. So let's begin this week's conversation of inspiration. I'd like to welcome my first guest, Edwina Dunn OBE, the formidable woman who founded Dunn Humby and spoke so brilliantly about mindset. You might not have heard of Edwina, but her work will have certainly impacted you. She was the first mastermind behind the Tesco Club Card and redefined how brands understood their customers and set the precedent for a whole new world of marketing and consumer marketing and business. In this clip, she shares the challenging years that precede the launch of Dunn Humby and the pain of leaving her first company. And I felt such a connection with her because whilst our chosen fields are different, actually, our journey shares so many similarities. And so it was just an honour to hear her insights. Perhaps even more pertinent because as she was sharing her experience in the clip, I was in the early weeks of launching Holly & Co. and her resolve that no matter what, they would build and they would survive. Well, you can imagine it spoke to my heart.
Well, it wasn't a pretty ending, which you always hope for, you know. I mean, we wanted to. We saw that the future was customer data. So we were using census data and it was great. And honestly, I loved working at CACI. I learned so much. It was fantastic. But we could see that the future was changing and that customer data, because we could see it, we knew other people would be able to see it. And so we wanted to move to the next thing. And the company we were with were making so much profit from what we were doing that they didn't want to invest that profit in the next thing. Mm-hmm. And so we really had to choose between what we believed in and guaranteed salaries and bonuses for the next few years. And so ridiculously and very naively, we thought, no, we must follow our beliefs. But we did hedge our bets. And I said to Clive, who we were married at the time, I said, don't you worry, you go off and do, you know, what you believe will be the next thing. And I'll stay and pay the mortgage, because we've just taken on this big, fat new mortgage.
Yeah.
I then found out that the world is quite tough. And literally, when they eventually, having tried to persuade him, when they eventually accepted his resignation, they fired me 10 minutes later and said, well, you'd just be a spy in the camp. And so you've got to go. And I was truly heartbroken, deeply insulted, and emotionally exhausted. Mm. And I thought, life's not fair. Mm. Right. Well, we all know life's not fair. But I was still quite young at the time. So we were broke. And then, you know, they really wanted to stop us building this new, what might be competitive business. So they came after us in the law courts. They slapped an injunction on. We were taken to the High Court because we won one client, a new client.
But a new client, said, not their client.
Not their client, a new client. We won a new client and they said unfair. We used our...
your magic.
Specialist knowledge and what have you. It nearly broke us. I mean, that we appointed lawyers. We paced the room at night worrying that we were going to be destroyed. It nearly broke us. And there was one moment, Holly, where you know when the chips are down and you look at each other and you say, if they break us, if we are broke after all of this, can we rebuild?
Mm.
And we looked at each other and said, yes, we can. And at that point, their power just goes. And we thought, right. And we fought, we won.
Wow.
It still cost us a lot of money because they carried on, but we were free. And so that's when we started. So we were broke and we started a new business. And then, having gone through all of this, we said, right, well, now's the time for a family. So it was even harder and we were even madder.
Is that the power? Would you say that's the power? Because nothing shifted except your mindset in that moment.
It's mindset. It's exactly that, for me, is the epitome of when a mindset liberates you and gives you a ridiculous new power that you never had, which is no one is going to stop you doing what you really believe in.
God, absolutely. Switching a light on.
Yeah.
That illuminates a new path.
Yeah.
That was always there. And that's the power we all hold.
Yeah. Once someone takes away our sense of purpose, our sense of what we believe in, they destroy so much. And I think it's so easy to just fall into line and say, this is the easier way to live my life. But I believe, you know, to really follow, work really hard, but follow what you believe in is the greatest joy you can have.
I love that line, illuminating a new path. She talks at length about shining a light on inspiring female founders and how our younger generations cannot be what they cannot see. She was a founder that I hadn't met before, but deeply admired, and I have since forged a wonderful friendship with. Her counsel personally has been invaluable to me. So if you're listening to this, Edwina, thank you. My next guest is synonymous with the beauty industry, and yet perhaps like me, you may not have heard her story or heard it spoken before. It is the wonderful Ruby Hammer, MBE, the beauty entrepreneur, founder of Ruby & Miller, founder of Ruby Hammer Beauty, and an ambassador of the British Beauty Council. And her journey is, as ever, a fascinating one. I mean, I think every founder's story is bloody fascinating, but I love the raw emotion that she shared in this episode, a true heart on your sleeve episode.
Do you know what? Yeah. Nothing in this life, no one is shielded from what life can throw at you, and it can change in a moment. So whether that's your health, whether that's loss, whether that's emotional, romantic heartbreak, you know, I've been married and divorced, remarried, and now it's coming up to be almost longer than I was ever married. I'm not perfect, but the more I am, my health, touch wood, is okay. I've had issues because in our family, there's no diabetes, but we've got heart disease, and I had to have a stent put in, and I have no outward symptoms, nothing, slim as I am, but still. So, you know, anything can come at you from wherever. And what I've learned now is how you deal with them is a measure of who and what you are.
Yes.
So you can never make yourself immune. It doesn't exist. It doesn't exist for what color you are, what age you are, what sex you are, what nationality you are, how rich you are, how influential you are. Everybody is vulnerable. So we have to have the grace to be grateful for what you've got and think a little bit of what, I got a bit emotional there. There's plenty of people out there that don't have what we have. Have the grace to realize how much you have and do what you can to help those that don't when you can.
Ruby was so gracious and open in her conversation with me, and I'm sure you could hear just how deeply she lived by those words. Truly a kind soul. Ruby and all the founders who join me are the antithesis of that side of business that you potentially see on TV with The Apprentice and Dragon's Den. They're joyful, they're emotional, they're creative, they're empathetic. And it's those traits that have seen them carve their own path in the world, not by tearing others down, but by lifting those around them. Living in gratitude is something that I do every day, and I think it's an innate part of who I am as a human being. It comes naturally to me. There's rarely a day that goes by. Actually, in fact, I go as far to say that there isn't a day that goes by that I am not consciously aware of feeling grateful. I'm lucky that in the team and in my world, those I surround myself with live in the same way. There is something really special about that, about looking at those closest to you, those you're building with, and squeezing one another's hand in that moment, and know that you feel so deeply grateful. So I think it's an emotion that's potentially too big to hold inside. Now, I did say that this has been a year full of phenomenal guests, and whilst you might think I say that every year, and in fact I probably do, I think really this year has been an exceptional collective of souls on the podcast who have shared insights on things that I had rarely ever thought about before. It's hard to describe Lady Edwina Grosvenor and the devotion she has given to women within the prison system, because I found her episode incredibly eye-opening. And whilst I have been lucky enough to have an insight into the world through a number of other podcast guests, such as Katie Emk, the founder of Fine Cell Work, the prison system, I suppose, generally is something that very few of us think about, perhaps at all. And yet, incredibly, a woman like Edwina is working tirelessly, day in, day out, to not only positively impact women's lives within prison, but to actually provide a solution. I found some of the things that Edwina shared with me truly unbelievable. And yet, it's happening right now in the prison system. And she realised that despite consistently campaigning for change, sharing her vision and lobbying those in power, she couldn't make people sit up and do it. So she did it herself. She built Hope Street, a blueprint, replicable across the country, providing a solution to the female prison crisis. Here she is sharing exactly why Hope Streets across the UK need to exist.
We have 12 women's prisons in England, and there's about 130 prisons altogether in this country. So it is a small proportion. And of those women, most of them are in for short sentences mm-hmm. because their crimes are less serious. It's not uncommon for a woman to serve a couple of days in prison or a week.
Yeah.
It's a waste of money. It's a waste of time. It's a waste of everything. Nothing useful can be done with the woman in that time. But it is enough time, of course, for everything to unravel. So because women globally are usually the primary carers.
Yes.
What then happens when a woman goes into prison and everyone kind of thinks, and actually this was a misconception in Nepal that I found very interesting. Everyone kind of thought with those sort of Indian Nepalese families that the family would then take on the children.
Yes.
Well, no, because you brought disgrace upon the household. So absolutely not. So the children went to prison with the women, certainly in Nepal when I was there, which is why the organization that I worked for,
which is why you were there,
why we took the children out of the prison so that we could feed them, educate them and give them what they needed. And then we'd take them back into the prison to visit their mothers. So that's another sort of area of female imprisonment. And, you know, and I would also like to point out, which I feel like I always have to do, and it's kind of annoying, you know, we don't talk about women's imprisonment at the detriment of men. And I've been interviewed a couple of times on the radio about this, and the sort of media narrative sort of, you can feel it eking in. It's like, oh, so we should lock up all the men and let all the women out, should we? And I have to take a deep breath and I go, no, because that would be ridiculous. Obviously, no one with half a brain cell is saying that. But what we are saying is that on the whole, men are more violent. There are many more men in prison, as I said, the 96% versus the 4%. Men, typically, their routes into prison are very, very different. And it's more tricky. It's more violent. It's more, you know, the men will get on the roof of the prisons. They'll riot. They'll fight. They'll make the headlines.
Mm.
The women don't. And because they tend to turn their violence inwards and self-harm and hurt themselves and beat themselves up, they tend to suffer in silence. And because they're the minority, and because the prison service was designed by men for men. Now, I don't say that as a whinge or to be defensive. It's just true,
mm-hmm.
which is also why women can't get their sanitary products when they need to. It's why they're put in men's clothing. It's why they're asked to stitch men's underwear, by the way, in some prisons in our country. And imagine if you've been the survivor of sexual abuse and actually your job that day is to stitch men's underwear to send it to the male prisons. And actually, when it comes to pregnancy in prison, only recently after the death of high-profile deaths of two babies, only then did statutory maternity care come into prisons. That was in 2021.
Edwina later goes on to share that women, when they leave prison, are often given tents because they're homeless and have nowhere to go. It is an open and known fact within the prison service, but I found this insight very shocking. Not only that, as she shared more about the circumstances and the paths into prison for the majority of women, let alone the routes out, well, it's fundamentally changed my outlook. I don't know about you, but I barely have time to shop these days, let alone scour the UK for the most thoughtful gift ideas or standout homeware or those one-of-a-kind items you can't live without. Well, don't worry, because I've done it for you. And I'll even deliver them straight to your inbox each week. From the latest must-have items from the UK's most creative independent businesses to those unexpected finds with deeply soulful stories behind them, people have been kind enough to say it's the one email they don't just read, but actively wait for. Plus, I'm not afraid to open up about what's really on my mind. If a little vulnerability might help someone else, then I'm just all for it. So if you want to know about the trickier sides of being a 47-year-old entrepreneur who's also trying to parent, follow their purpose, and generally navigate life, I'll share that too, along with some exclusive offers, updates, and things I've seen and love. Sign up to our emails at holly.co. But for now, let's get back to our conversation of inspiration. I said this year has been full of guests who have had profound impact on my life. And I have to say, Leslie Udwin is perhaps a guest who has personally affected me the most. Her episode is raw and it's challenging. And at times, it's incredibly difficult to listen to. I debated at length with the team whether to leave some of the most challenging parts of this episode in. We, in the end, felt we should, and it was true to Leslie, her journey, and the factual reality of the world beyond our own experiences. It's been conversations like this, when your world can feel all-consuming. You're maybe dealing with issues at your feet that day, you're having cash flow challenges within your company, or it's just a bad day, that when you speak to someone like Leslie and your eyes are reopened to the world, you're pulled out of thinking that your challenge is unsurmountable and you realign. Leslie's conversation renewed me on that day with an absolute unwavering focus. If you haven't listened to Leslie, can I please urge you to? I think it's genuinely one of the most important conversations I've ever captured. Leslie's the founder of Think Equal, and Think Equal is a global initiative which calls for a system change in education to end the discriminatory mindset and the cycle of violence across our world and ensure positive life outcomes for our children. In short, she's created the solution to solve the world's largest issues in one generation. Here she is sharing the ethos and thinking behind her mission.
It's very important because in metaphoric language, which our little ones come to learn pretty soon after 3 to 6, right? They start learning that everything black is associated with the negative and everything white is pure and beautiful. And, you know, that is what we're doing to the self-esteem of our darker-skinned children. And what we prove in Think Equal with one brown crayon is, and in fact, here it is, there's one of them on my desk in Look Hole, brown crayon. We get the kids in pairs and they draw a very, very pale brown circle and then a very dark brown circle. And when we put the pale brown circle to my skin and the white paper to my skin, we see that it's the pale brown that fits me, not the white. And it's the dark brown that suits the little girl who the children have previously called black, not the black. We now know every single one of us on this earth are brown. We're just different shades of brown. That's the kind of learning that takes place in Think Equal. And the children see this with the evidence of their own eyes. Now, I've gone on a gigantic detour. But, you know, I cannot any longer say white people. I was saying when Mandela came out, did that mean that racism was over in South Africa? That Connie and domestic servants ceased to exist and everyone was now? Of course it didn't. Why? And this goes to the heart of why Think Equal is critical and why we will get nowhere in terms of changing the mindset and changing the fortunes of this world, the climate, the world heating up, the wars, the gender-based violence, the knife crime, the hate crimes. We won't change any of that without changing the mindset. End of story, right? So why is it so critical? Because these things don't change. They live on in the human breast. Absolutely entrenched. And all that happens after the age of 6, which parents by definition are, is that they generationally and cyclically pass these discriminations down to their children. And then we are screwed because it just happens generation after generation. The only way to interrupt it is to go in during the window of optimal modifiability of the neuropathways to pro-social from antisocial. Neuroscience is very clear about this. There isn't a neuroscientist in the world who would gainsay what I've just said. And we have to create, co-create with the children, a new generation of thinkers, a new generation of leaders.
It was so hard to pick a single clip for Leslie. Her entire podcast is a must-listen and was filled with jaw-dropping insights and information. And if you want to find out more about Leslie and her mission or how you can get involved, head over to thinkequal.org. Phenomenal women have been at the epicenter of this podcast this year, and the golden thread that was most prevalent throughout has been the sheer grit and determination they've all shown, and at times, I have to say, endured, in pursuit of their vision. And I don't know if it's the same theme that's jumped out for you, or whether it's perhaps simply just resonated with me more than ever this year, as I've held on tight and dug deep alongside all my wonderful team. It's the beauty of podcasts, I suppose, that we can all take what we need from them. So I hand over to Debbie Wusko, the founder of Allbright and the chair of the Better Menopause, and her philosophy of the three G's. Grit, grace, graft. Graft, grace, grit.
Yeah, yeah.
Tell me about this, because I loved this when you shared it. And I actually just can't... Yeah, I can't agree with you more. This combination, I got goosebumps when you said it. Explain those three words and why you believe in them so much for female entrepreneurs.
So I'm very simple, really, you know, simply minded. I find
sort of, well, Debbie, you can say that to yourself.
As I get older, I like, okay, I'm that. But I like simplicity and I get asked to speak a lot. So I try to find ways to make things memorable, right? As I've tried to distill what matters to me, what are my values, what do I look for? Because I invest a lot, as you know, and I think it's these three G's. So, and I'm a northerner, as you, even though I don't sound like it anymore. So I think graft, I don't know if we talk about it enough. It's just really hard work, right?
I don't think we do.
You know, it's just hard
work. Absolutely
not. And that's not hustle porn. It's just hard work. Mm-hmm. You've got to pull hard. You just got to put the hours in. There is no shortcut. It doesn't matter how much experience you've got. You've got to work hard and you've got to have the appetite for hard work. And not everybody does. Mm-hmm. AJ and I always say, you like, we WhatsApp from first thing in the morning to last thing at night. You have to find that fun. I find it fun. You know, I find like, oh, yes, and there's an idea and there's a thing and we could do this, we could do that. I find that gives me energy. If that level of input makes you feel exhausted or frustrated or as if you don't have the appetite, like, forget it.
Don't do it.
It's just volume. Mm. So I think that graph point is a point. I think the second G for me is grace. That's also my daughter's name, although she's Gracie. What comes with age, I think, is grace under pressure. Sometimes it's hard, particularly when you're impatient. I'm very impatient. But I think the thing that stood me in almost the most stead has been my relationships, never burning bridges, keeping people in my life who've been in my life forever, saying thank you, you know, like being there for reaching out, seeing how people are, checking in, being responsive. And that's really hard because a bit like you, I have this kind of, well, particularly my LinkedIn sort of alter ego, and I get a lot of incoming and you can't really reply to people. And but, you know, trying to. So I think that grace and graciousness, gracefulness is important.
Yes.
But the final G, the most important G for me, is grit. Grit trumps genius every day of the week. You know, you can be book smart, I'm book smart, but it doesn't really help. It's grit. And I'm not a reader of business books at all, so I'm a massive consumer of fiction and that's my happy place. But Angela Duckworth's book on grit, I think, is a phenomenal book because that is the point of difference. And I think when you listen to someone speaking on a podcast like this, or you look at them on social, or you hear their story and it all sounds effortless, it was absolutely not. There were moments of despair. There were moments where we had £1,000 in the bank account with payroll due the next day. There were moments of personal crisis. There's been everything. But the thing that gets you through is grit. And I think grit can be learned. I think that a lot of what we started the podcast talking about routine and fitness, and, you know, I think when all around you is in flames, it's your routine that gets you through and it's your sense of self. And I've always backed myself, even when I really felt like it, right? You know, things have just felt too hard. And there's a big thing in that, which I think is something else that may be worth sharing, useful for people to hear, is when absolute Armageddon happens, and it has, when things have gone so wrong. Well known, I was a single mom when my kids were 3 and 1. That was most definitely not the plan. I give myself 24 hours to feel sorry for myself.
Okay.
Right? 24 hours of lie, it's not fair.
Yeah.
Punch the pillow.
Yeah.
Cry, scream, punch the punch bag in my case, whatever. And then I'm like, right, you're done.
Okay.
You're done. Like 24 hours and then you're done. You have to pull yourself up because I've got amazing friends. I've got my siblings and I are super close, but nobody is doing it for you. apart from you. They're just not.
Yes.
So give yourself 24 hours and then be done.
It has, by all accounts, been a challenging time for women across the globe. And I don't know about you, but in the past couple of weeks, my social feed and the conversations within the office has been squarely focused around the recent US presidential election and a feeling, I suppose, of hopelessness. And yet, as this podcast shows, the power of women is immense. The vision and drive to get the job done. The community of women listening to this podcast and all the wonderful male allies who will be listening too, we should feel very hopeful. Because despite what the news might tell us, there is an innate human desire to love, to do good, and to make positive strides in the world. It is apt then that my next guest is perhaps one of the best placed in the world to talk about the impact women can have by collectively channeling our incredible talents. Helen Pankhurst, CBE, the great-granddaughter of Emmeline Pankhurst and the founder of the Centenary Action Group, shares a wealth of knowledge in her episode. I have to say it was a real pinch-me moment when she agreed to join me. It is another example of taking on the challenge and driving forward the solution, not just with words, but with action. You mentioned your book, Deeds Not Words, in 2019 that was published, and using all your knowledge and experience to explore, and I love these ideas, the chapters that you explored, looking at how, despite wave after wave of feminism, women are still not equal. So why is it taking so long? And what changes do we still need to see in our society? I mean, we've talked about some of those, but it's 100 years, coming up to 100 years of the vote. You've been at it all your life. If we keep going at the same pace, it's going to be 249 years, I think, parity between men and women. Over to you. I don't know what she did. Sorry. Loaded question there.
No, big one. Okay. It's difficult because all of the ways society is structured rely on women being quiet, being supportive of men, not financially valued for the things that we do. The whole edifice of, if you want to be grand about this, capitalism and patriarchy rely on women's subordinate status. So the whole system kind of pushes down on women and girls. That's why it's hard. However, if and as we call that out, as we connect up across our differences as women, as we explain the problems of all of that for the world, when we've talked about, you know, climate, for the planet, the problems of that capitalist patriarchal system, its ideas of how to run economies and look after nature, you know, all of that needs a different eye. And I'm not saying that women would solve all of the problems. I'm saying that the way it's been structured has been with a male lens, and we need different lenses and different perspectives, and that will make things change. So what can people do? What can women do? What can male allies do? We need those male allies. I don't know how many of your listeners are male, but we need them. Is engagement in the issue of restructuring society so that we get that plurality of views and experiences and positions. We need the optimism and the understanding that this needs perseverance. Those of you who are interested in political engagement, please engage with the Centenary Action, which is a coalition. It involves about 10 million people indirectly, because we've got Mumsnet and the WIs and the many, many organizations. But individuals, please kind of look up the Centenary Action and see if you can engage, amplify. Let's get our parliament. I said we were 46th in the world in terms of the gender representation, i.e. we've got 45 countries doing better than us. Let's make sure that by 2028, we are way up there, that we have 50%. We can do it because we are focused. We think by the next election, we think after this election, it might go up to about 40% of women, possibly. If we do, then it's only another 10% to get to 40%, from 40 to 50%. We are addressing the barriers. We're understanding them. We're understanding particular vulnerabilities. So, for example, disabled people in Parliament face specific problems. We need to do things about that, not ignore that. So understand intersectionality. And with enough push and demand, I think we can get there.
It isn't just incredible women, of course, on this podcast. I've welcomed a whole host of insightful, visionary, brilliant men. Matt Paulson, the founder of Omaze, was one of the most surprising guests in this series. I wasn't quite sure what to expect, in all honesty. Despite the research, I wondered if he might be an American tech bro with a touch of bravado and a brilliant story to tell. I couldn't have been further from the truth, and Matt was simply just an incredible guest. I think his episode is up there in perhaps my top 10 of all time conversations. No mean feat when it's a conversation number 207. And I'm sure you would have come across Omaze, the incredible houses you can win and the huge sums of money that they donate to charity. His mission is to be the biggest corporate donor to charities in the world outside of governments is simply awe-inspiring and is testament to the seemingly simple mission and idea and the monumental impact it can have. Matt was humble and kind and clever and intuitive and deeply spiritual. He also happens to be one of the most incredible storytellers, and I was deeply moved by the story shared in this next clip. I felt it would only be right to share it again in this podcast. Tissues at the ready, everyone.
When I was born, my stomach was twisted in a knot. I was supposed to die when I was born. And then they did this, you know, big surgery to fix that. There were 2/3 of my small intestine. And then 40 years later, scar tissue from that surgery somehow freakishly kind of like broke off and helped create this bowel obstruction. And I didn't know that at the moment. I just knew that my stomach was really hurting. My stomach has hurt my whole life because of that surgery. So I just, it was kind of normal for me. But then it kind of get to the point where it looked like I was like 9 months pregnant. So I called my friend who's a doctor and said, hey, this is what's going on. I'm throwing a party tonight. I'd like to be at that party, but I just want to make sure I don't need to go to the hospital. He said, you should go to the hospital. It might be that your appendix is bursting. Maybe you'll be back in time. So I go there. They do all these tests. They can't figure out what's going on. My parents are there. Our COO, Helen, are there at the hospital because I was supposed to be meeting her. And then after hours of this, they just say to them, okay, we're going to keep Matt overnight. You guys go home. If he's not better in the morning, if this doesn't just work itself out, then we'll do surgery then. You know, no big deal. So they leave. Helen pulls into her driveway. At this point, it's 11 o'clock at night. She's been in the hospital all day. She's exhausted and she's going to get out of her car. And something tells her that she should go back to the hospital. And Helen is British, a COO. She's very serious. She's not like a Venice Beach, listen to the cosmos person. You know, this is like totally out of character for her. But she said the voice was undeniable. So she drove back. And if she hadn't driven back, I probably would have died like 45 minutes later. Because my blood pressure had plummeted and the machine's not alerted the nurse. And she came in and she had been in the hospital.
It hadn't alerted the nurse.
No. We still don't know why. But yeah, she came in and had been in the hospital with her grandmother back here in Devon for a couple of weeks. And so she knew how to read like the blood pressure and she knew that that was very low. So she went and got the doctor and the doctor saw it and immediately called in a crash team. They rushed me down into surgery. I came out of surgery and then they said to my mom, the good news is we figured out what it is. It's a bowel obstruction. The bad news, he's in critical condition. His heart rate's continuing to plummet and we don't know why. A couple hours pass. My mom goes downstairs to get my dad and my brother. She's coming back up and she hears over the loudspeaker code blue in room 437. And my mom worked in the hospital. So she knew that meant flatline and she knew that was my room. So she got off the elevator, she ran down the hall and she got to the door and the nurse said, I'm sorry, you can't come in. This is very serious. And my mom said, look, I was there when he came in this world. If he's leaving this world right now, I'm going to be in that room. So she lets her in the room and I'm flatlined and they're doing the defibrillator, you know, the paddles and my body is bouncing up and down, but I'm not responding, totally flatlined. So my mom, you know, starts to lose it. A little bit, starts to crumble because, you know, it's one thing to lose a child. It's another thing if it's right there in front of you. And at the same time, my dad was outside with my brother and this doctor came out and said to another doctor in front of my brother, not knowing it was my brother, hey, I think we lost this guy. I think he's gone. And so my brother pushed my dad in the room, and my dad kind of, my mom was facing kind of the right. My dad came in from the left, and he was crying so loudly because he thought it was already gone. But my mom turned to him to say, like, Gary, you gotta be quiet, or they're gonna kick us out of this room. And when she did that, she said she saw something she'd never seen before in a hospital. She said that every nurse and every staff member and every doctor in the ICU had just gravitated outside this window. And there was like 40 of them. And she said they looked like the silent church choir, just sending in positive energy. And she was so moved that these people were sending love to her son that they didn't even know, that it was like this spiritual experience for her. It just filled her up with strength. And she started coaching me. You know, she's like, Matthew David Poulsen, these people are fighting to save your life. They are fighting so hard to bring you back, but you're not fighting hard enough. You need to show them you're a fighter, Matthew David Poulsen. You need a fight to come back to us. You know, they said it was a surreal experience because here's this 65-year-old mom in the operating room. There's never a 65-year-old mom in the operating room on Grey's Anatomy. Like, they're not allowed in there, you know, but yeah. She was in there. And as you said, the flatline went on for 4.5 minutes, which is a long time. They don't always fight that long. But because she kept fighting, they kept fighting. But then at one point, my mom started to think like, oh my God, I'm going to lose my son. You know, and if I lose my son, my husband's probably going to die of a broken heart. Mm. And so she was trying to process that. She was there. And then at the same time, the main doctor kind of shook his head as if to say like, this is done. And he turned away. And she grabbed his arm and she said, please, please don't call it yet. And then he turned back and he said, wait a second. And then they're looking at the flatline machine, you know, just watching it go along and going along and waiting to see if there's just some kind of sign of it like ticking up. But instead of that, then they said something happened that they'd truly never seen before in the hospital. Instead of the thing ticking up, all of a sudden I popped up.
Oh my God.
And then the whole room kind of like looked at me, and I remember opening up and seeing this room of people just like with their mouths wide open, like in shock. And then I looked over and I saw my mom, and then I saw my dad, and I kind of lifted my right arm and gave him a thumbs up.
I mean, what can you say after that story? It's grit, it's determination, the fierceness of a mother's love and female intuition. It's spiritual, it's fate. I don't quite know what it is, but what a privilege to be hearing that together today. Matt goes on to share the impact that that experience has had on his life and his bold vision for the future. So do have a listen if you haven't yet heard his episode, because you won't be disappointed. At this point in the podcast, I want to hand over to our partners at Dell Technologies. If you're a regular listener to Conversations of Inspiration or follow any of the Holly & Co. content, you know that Dell sits at the very heart of our community. We've been partnered for several years now, and they've been instrumental in bringing our business pharmacy sessions to life, powering our advice hub and supporting this very podcast. They were also key partners during difficult times, leading the charge with SME SOS throughout COVID. As you listen, you're likely deep into the festive season, working hard, spreading joy and bringing creativity in the homes across the UK. Dell wants you to know that they're here to support you. Passionate advocates for small businesses, Dell understands the unique challenges that founders face. That's why they've created the Dell Women Entrepreneurs Network, or DWEN, a global community of over 100,000 female founders, offering free events, mentoring, and an incredible network of women ready to connect and share insights. But that's not all. With their Dell for Startups initiative, Dell ensures you can get access to your very own tech advisor completely free to help you plan and meet your tech needs at every stage of your journey. And I can wholeheartedly say that the entire Dell team we work with truly loves supporting small businesses. They're always seeking new ways to help you grow and thrive. To learn more about our partnership with Dell, the resources that they provide, or how you can access their free support, head over to holly.co/Dell. Next up is Ashita Cabra Davis, the founder of the rental platform By Rotation, who, much like Matt, is still in the relatively early stages and yet disrupting a sector and ruffling some feathers. And I always think it's so interesting to hear from founders who are very much on the journey, overcoming obstacles, digging deep and holding on.
The journey is still, you know, filled with self-doubt. And I think I can't recommend this job, as you said, to anyone. I think you have to be a very, very resilient person. You have to be very tenacious. You have to be relentless almost. Even when nothing works for you, you will still stand up and be like, I'm still going to try and, you know, check that stone because I don't think I've turned that one. Mm-hmm. So I will say it's not for everyone. You know, there's been times when we've been through some very, very ugly spots, right? Like, I mean, fundraising, as you know, is notoriously
I'm going to ask you about that now.
Yeah, it's notoriously difficult for female founders, for then if you're a woman of color, and then if you're an immigrant, you didn't go to the same schools, you don't know these people, they don't know your parents, so they can't really trust you, so they won't give you money. So that was an issue. The other thing that happened during COVID, which was quite a big shock, was one of our, I would call them a peer, but I think they see us as a competitor, you know, tried to sue us and shut us down. And it was very much like women don't actually support other women. And we're too early to be even, you know, doing such things to each other. But that was a complete surprise and shock. But I think, you know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And for me, that was, again, just another proof that people are worried about us because we are kind of, you know, moving the market. We are very much disrupting the space, and that's, you know, ruffling some feathers, and that's fine. But that was sort of, you know, I guess sort of a rude shock of realizing that not everything is positive and great.
Since our conversation, I've enjoyed following Ashita's journey. She continues to go from strength to strength, and it's such an interesting sector, not only from a consumer behavioral or sustainability perspective, but also from the future of brands and how they'll adapt and evolve within the rental market. The joy of this podcast is that I get to speak to so many wonderful people, those who otherwise we may never cross paths with. And yet so quickly we build a connection, a rapport, and so often we share a set of values. The excitement of Jules Oliver saying yes to joining me on this podcast was very real and a highlight of our year. And she didn't disappoint. She was everything you can imagine she might be. Kind, gentle, calm, generous. And perhaps what I hadn't anticipated was this word grit and her strength and her resolve to keep on going no matter what the circumstances. It was a really beautiful conversation and I feel honoured to have captured it. Here's just a little snippet. In it, she refers to her miscarriages. And so if you would prefer not to listen to this clip, please do skip forward by 3 minutes and I'll meet you on the other side.
So you found your happy place, your family. You went on to obviously have 5 beautiful children. What were the early days like? So you're having children. Jamie's career is kicking off. You are more of the, I'm assuming, you are taking on the lion's share of parenting.
Yeah.
How did you navigate that? Was there ever any resentment? I only talk because, you know, me and my girlfriends and my colleagues, you know, the chat is all about who's working harder, who's going to do this,
always,
the unfair share of labour, the invisible labour. That's a very, very big topic. Was there ever any resentment, or is this something that you... You know, we all like to think that Jules and Jamie wrote down a lovely list and they agreed at the beginning and then happy times. What's the reality?
Oh, yeah, completely the opposite. It was really hard. Poppy and Daisy, I felt, and he would agree that I kind of brought up myself because he just wasn't there. This was the time when he was flying high and big and he was everywhere. And it wasn't that I wanted to be with him in Australia or America. I wasn't really interested in traveling. But I did just think, like, hang on, it's not really very fair. I'm doing this on my own, like you do. Mm. And of course, like I say, the invisible load, they're not going to see all the stuff you do behind the scenes, which was hard. So I feel like I'm obviously really close to all my children, but those two really close because we did it together. Mm-hmm. And he would also agree. He was there when he definitely could be.
Yeah.
But now with the younger three, it's a whole different ballgame because he can be, as he's got older, he's realised the importance and, you know, we both have. So it's different relationships had with the three little ones, as I say, to the two older ones.
Yeah.
So they get him far more, and I do feel like it's shared far more. And now I'm doing my own thing as well. It's always nice to feel you can do your own thing, and, you know, so it feels quite equal. But in the beginning, I don't know what the word is, but yeah, there probably was. It probably is a bit of resentfulness. Like, I'm always at home with the baby, always, 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 you know. But then I thought, but that's what I wanted. And then you think, oh, then I feel guilty. And it's like,
yes, the cycle.
Yeah, this is what I asked for. And now I want to do something else. And it's like, it's very annoying.
And amongst those days of caring for your children, and I know you've been very honest about this, you had devastating miscarriages and you suffered terrible heartache and nearly lost your life. And I'm so sorry, Jules, for going through all of that. It must have been so traumatic, not once, but five times. How did you manage to keep, how did you navigate that?
I don't know, really. I think anyone who's ever had a miscarriage would kind of, I don't know, you just sort of, I think you just do. And I think it's amazing that we talk about it now, because before we didn't talk about it. So you just go, morning, on the school run, and it'd be literally happening. I think maybe I haven't really. Maybe that's down there with
that's
dad.
The
and maybe that needs to, yeah, that's the therapy time. I must call
I must
a therapist.
Book in. I must book in. Do that. After job I go food study. Shopping, I'm going to kind of make sure I do that phone call.
Yeah, I say that all the time. So I don't think I probably have, actually. So I can't really answer that. I mean, yeah. I think as I realised my journey was coming to an end with trying for a baby, because there was always hope. I think hope just gets you through every miscarriage. Well, I hope next time it's going to work. Why would it's going to work? And, you know, so that got me through. And then I had COVID, I'm on medication, I can't try for a baby anymore, and I'm 49, so probably not. So I kind of think now that I'll start thinking, God, that's really unfair, or God, that was awful, or how horrific that was. But at the time, I was just on a treadmill to keep going.
As Jules shared, there is always hope. And holding on to that hope tightly as we navigate challenging times is where we end this podcast with my final guest, Nick Hounsfield, founder of The Wave. This episode was a wonderful mix of the entrepreneurial journey, the highs, the lows, the grit, the determination, a huge vision, all wrapped up in emotion, kindness, and adversity. I haven't yet made it to The Wave, and I hope to with Harry in the spring. But if you don't know what it is, please do a quick Google. It is a feat of beautiful engineering, all against the odds.
With something, you can look back on life and see that there are probably some mounting sort of symptoms that were sort of starting to show. But I was pretty stressed at that time, without a doubt. There's some stuff going on that, you know, I was not sleeping brilliantly and was stressed, without a doubt. Mm-hmm. But it's not a stress that I hadn't had before, but just had just some slightly weird symptoms. And yeah, I was just playing hockey one day. Apparently I was quite distant. You know, a lot of the team players said, oh, Nick was a little bit, wasn't quite himself on that day. And then, yeah, just was running around right at the beginning of the hockey match. And suddenly my vision wasn't quite right. I wasn't tracking the ball well. I was missing the ball. I just wasn't quite right. And then suddenly started to drop the grip on my hockey stick. It was getting looser and looser. I thought, well, that's a bit weird. And then I just felt, all I can say is just felt quite scared, quite anxious, and like something bad was happening, and I couldn't put my finger on what was going on.
Gosh.
So I was like, all right, I'm gonna, and it was weird. It was like an out of body experience. It was like I was watching everything from about a meter behind and above me, watching everything play out. It was really, really freaking strange. So I just put the fear of God on me. So I just ran off to the dugout, and then everybody started to ask, like, Nick, you've just started the match. What's wrong? Well, get back onto the pitch. And I knew what I wanted to say, but I couldn't say anything. And all I could say was, and then more and more people started asking, like, what's going on? What's going on? What's going on?
Yeah.
And I just couldn't speak. And that's then when somebody who's a medic in the background said, oh my God, I think he's having a stroke. And the second he said that, I was like, oh, holy crap, I'm having a stroke. I know exactly what the symptoms of a stroke are, and I'm having it. I've lost my grip.
Yeah.
I can't speak. My eyes are going weird. Yeah, something really bad is going on. And yeah, that was the start of, complete new chapter in my life, really. Just suddenly realizing that I'm not invincible anymore.
Gosh.
Yeah.
So this happened. So I'm thinking of this person who is all go, all the time, mm-hmm. energy, leader, consumed with the wave, consumed with what you're building. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly, I mean, it must be from someone who, again, feels quite similar to yourself. It's like an idea of hell, of course, because of the stroke, but also just stopping, you know, stopping what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Your first months of recovery, talk to me about what that was, because I know that you were watering the plants around the wave, you were cleaning the lake, you were getting into the water. And this itself had another profound effect on you and another sort of a moment of realization of what also was going on.
Yeah, I mean, I guess those first few months, you know, it was in pandemic. I was pretty much just in the room I am right now, just with the dog, just alone with my thoughts. You know, kids were at school, my wife was working. I spent a lot of time just listening to podcasts, reading or trying to read and just reflecting. And then once we were able to sort of get out a little bit more and, you know, I was able to, for the first time, to actually go and enjoy the wave and what we'd created, being able to be in and around water. You know, it was still in lockdown, but I was able to at least get outside and utilize that space, which mm-hmm. is, you know, in many ways was a massive blessing, because I guess going right back to the beginning of when we opened, I've always thought it feels like inviting loads of hypercritical people into your home when you've only just bought it and you've not even moved in yet.
What a brilliant analogy. Gosh,
but it is, it's just like opening up something massively publicly before you've even had a chance to use it and own it and enjoy it yourself. So it was a real blessing to have that time where I was able to be in and around the water and cleaning the lake and all that sort of stuff. But what I did then realize is that every single day I was cleaning the lake and being in and around water, I was actually getting better. The two things that helped me was sleeping in the afternoon seemed to really help my brain health and get me back getting better, and being in water. And I just, you know, that connection, again, that sort of connection to being in and around water and how important that always had been in my whole life and how that was becoming something that was really, really healing to me. Suddenly that realization that, oh, well, of course, this is why we built this blooming place, is like, this is a panacea for health. Like we've been really sort of, I guess, going down this route of like, we've got to get open and get, you know, obviously we need to sort of make money to be able to pay the investors and all the rest of it. But actually fundamentally going back to the original premise of it, which was blue health, getting people outdoors and into nature and being able to make people healthy again or help people get healthy again, I was experiencing that. And then, of course, then once the pandemic started to sort of everything open up again, it was such an easy thing to market and talk to people about. Yes. Like the thing that we've been restricted from over the last year is now being opened back up. And that connection to people, connection to planet, and being outdoors in nature, being happy, healthy, and exercising, this is all opened up again to us, and we need to sort of seize the day.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, that's why that particularly that first year post pandemic was boom, because nobody was traveling abroad. People were looking for something to do that was fundamentally far more healthy than what they'd been doing in lockdown. And therefore, you know, that narrative that I'd gone through in life and lockdown and surviving the stroke actually is that's what everybody had been going through. I think loads of people through their life has been going through almost like a stroke, where they've not actually understood the power of what we have around us and how important it is to utilize it and protect it. And it's something that I'm hoping, although I think stuff's been slipping, I'm hoping that people still treasure the fact that there's a connection to people and connection to planet that is incredibly important, and that we need to protect it.
Mm.
It's so important to us for the health of the planet and the health of people and the health of yourself.
A connection to people and a connection to the planet is perhaps the perfect sentiment from Nick on which to come to the end of our time together today.
Humans are storytellers, and connection and learning about others is crucially important for our own growth, our own well-being, and to propel us forward to each make a positive impact on the world. I want to say thank you for joining me today, and thank you for joining me this year. This podcast is part of a passion project for me personally, as much as it is also just made for you. Yes, that's right. You're listening to this right now because I know, just like me, when you hear all these founders week in, week out, it gives you that grit and determination and vision to keep going, to carve our own paths in the world and to navigate all that you must every day. I also don't take for granted the precious minutes and hours that you spend with me, and I'm deeply grateful. We have less and less time in our busy lives, and so the fact that you have chosen to spend your precious minutes with me, well, I just couldn't be more grateful. So thank you. And on that note, as you will likely know, it is that point in the podcast that I hand over to our guest to read a letter to their younger self. And each year, it is also at that point I have the most difficult task of choosing just one to end the year with. As ever, it is essentially an impossible task, hence why we now have a whole mini-series of the podcast Letters to My Younger Self, because we felt they deserved a whole spotlight on their own. Anyway, I digress. I found it nearly impossible to pick a letter, but I eventually settled on one. It's from the formidable Clover Stroud, journalist, author, and podcast host. And I can do her letter no justice in a single sentence. You just have to listen to her beautiful, creative, and deeply emotional and insightful words and absorb them for yourself. These final minutes, I think, are the testament to the depth of emotion and raw vulnerability that guests share with us each week. And I feel privileged to hear them, to share them with you, and for us to travel this path together. For now, I leave you with Clover, and I send you all my love.
A big, strange, difficult, beautiful life is lying ahead for you. And at this point, right at the start, I want you to believe in yourself. And I want you to believe in an inner strength you possess, which is going to take you through. Because this strength is your superpower. Listen to me. You have a towering strength inside you, although you probably won't feel it yet. In fact, you probably feel the opposite of it right now, because this strength is something that life is going to reveal to you as you walk through it. And in order to find that strength, you will have to experience great loss and the darkest, blackest tragedy that will feel so terrible you'll sometimes question your ability to survive. But take that strength hiding inside you and know that an incredible life is awaiting for you. I'm telling you this now because I want you to know that when that loss and tragedy hits you, it doesn't mean that your life has gone wrong. Understanding that loss is at the centre of life is a profoundly important lesson, which will help you keep going when you feel broken. And that life of yours is stretched out before you like an unexplored valley which you'll cross. That valley of your life is full of harmonious, gorgeous, bright green pastures, which you will stroll through, astonished by the beauty of your surroundings. But in that valley are also sheer, dark rock faces with no footholds, swathed in darkness and mist, which will look insurmountable, terrifying, and absolutely hostile. There will be many, many rock faces like this. And when you cross them, and you will, you'll start to learn that valley, which is your life, is both outstandingly beautiful and terrifyingly bleak and hard. This is how life is. The beauty and the terror exist alongside one another almost all the time. As you walk on through your life, you'll learn how to hold and appreciate those two facts at the same time. Life is really, really difficult and absolutely extraordinary. At first, this will feel like a strange trick, but as you walk further into that valley, you'll get better at allowing yourself to feel the beauty of every day at the same time that you're absorbing the pain of loss, which will sometimes feel like it's going to consume you. But I want you to learn from that pain, because it's in that loss and that tragedy, and there will be many in your young life that you'll really find yourself, and you will find that strength I've told you about. I want you to try to inhabit the days and to feel the outer edges of yourself within them. Do not rush. Life moves fast, but there's also plenty of time. So allow yourself to get lost. And when you find yourself falling to your knees in despair, just surrender to it for a bit. Then gather your strength and walk on. Also know that there is no better place where these days of your life is leading. No easy destination you'll find a bit later down the life when you've achieved this or done that or got that. Life is now. And it's happening to you at this moment. This is it, here in your hands right now. There are other things that are important to know about other people, because your relationship with other people will help you so much in life and be a source of such joy and consolation. So, reach for the truth in the way you communicate with other people. Be honest and do not lie. Earning the trust of others is important, as it's the currency of human communication. Take an interest in other people, ask them their stories, listen to what they have to say, become a good listener, since the power of true and open human communication is exquisite and will teach you so much about life. Give your time to other people, be curious and share your story with other people too, be open. Treat people well and kindly, but do not measure your success against theirs. The valley of their life they are walking through is completely unlike your own, so comparing your route to theirs will achieve nothing. Instead, concentrate on your own path. Take time to look around you at the bright green valley you'll sometimes find yourself in, or a sparkling river meanders across a meadow, and take time to enjoy it. Feel the good moments when they're happening. Rejoice in your good luck to find yourself in such a peaceful, easy place, and store that memory inside you to sustain you and push you onwards when the valley changes and you reach that steep rock face, stumbling to find your footing, crying that you are lost, that you want to give up. Because you can keep going if you are calm. Keep going and be calm. Learn the habit of not panicking, but instead turning your fear into tenacity and courage. You have so much courage inside you. You're such a brave person with so much appetite for invention and creativity. But these are things that won't come to you straight away. You'll have to work for them. You'll have to push yourself on. Take your life seriously. Take your creativity seriously. Have fun and acknowledge each good moment when it's there, but work hard. You'll find yourself in work, and it will be a source of rich joy and absolute solace. And more than anything, learn that love is an active verb. Love openly and communicate your love as often as you can to the people who matter to you. You are strong, but allow yourself to be vulnerable too. Allow yourself to be loved and learn that you can love right back. Show the people you love, those that really matter to you, how much you care for them, not just in words, but how you cherish them too. Love will show you the extraordinary way that life renews itself. And love, more than anything, is where you will find your greatest joy. So go out. Your life is waiting. It's going to be so hard. It's going to be so bright and brilliant. Keep going.
thank you for joining me today. If you've enjoyed this episode, can I ask that you share it with a friend and like, subscribe and review it too, so that together we can inspire even more people to follow their dreams to build a life they love.